Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have become some of the longest conflicts in U.S. history. That has meant historic challenges in filling the ranks for an all-volunteer army. Filling the ranks in wartime for Iraq is tough. Tough for the young adults making the decision. Tough for military recruiters facing endless pressure to hit quotas. HBO's new documentary, The Recruiter, gets up close with the dilemmas and life and death decisions in one Louisiana town. Here's a hometown recruiter and his recruit.
They tell me what they want, and I show them how the Army can help them achieve this goal. They're going to leave there with a good feeling about the Army.
That's what pretty much made me make up my mind, was seeing him and the cool stuff he did and how much he loves the Army.
It's cool until it's not, until it's really not. And the stories of the young men and women targeted and signing up in this documentary are both inspiring and heartbreaking. This hour On Point, we'll talk with the director, recruiter, and recruit at the heart of HBO's The Recruiter. We'll turn in just a moment to the film and those at the heart of it, but with me first today from Washington to give us a sense of Army recruiting nationally now is Josh White, reporter for The Washington Post. He's covered the Pentagon and issues of military recruitment. Josh, thanks very much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome, Tom.
So we know they had some pretty tough times, and tough times during the period that this documentary was shot. What's the arc of recruiting been as we got into the bloodiest part of the Iraq War, and what's it look like now?
Well, it's very interesting. After September 11th, obviously, there was a groundswell of patriotism. There was a lot of interest in joining the military and the services, in part to do what people could to fight terrorism and to get involved. As the wars went on, and especially as we got involved in Iraq in 2003, recruiting started to become very difficult, especially in the fiscal year 2005, when the Army actually missed its recruiting goal for the first time in many years, seeing a lot of the difficulties that go along with an extended war. It followed very closely with, I think, the popularity or unpopularity of the war and its progress. As things got difficult in 2004 and 2005 in Iraq, you saw a lot of people questioning why we were there. Casualties were rising. The violence was increasing. It was unclear how long the war was going to last. And what ended up happening is that that had a fairly direct effect on the Army's ability to recruit because, as they've identified, the Army itself has identified, the influencers, the parents, coaches, friends of those who might enlist, were maybe not suggesting that, that people do it, were actually discouraging young people from joining the military. Things improved from 05 to 06 and 07 as the Army actually met its recruiting goals over the past couple of years, in part because they've been offering many incentives to young people to join, financial incentives, college incentives. They've put more recruiters out on the streets, trying to combat two major things, the ongoing war and an economy that was doing fairly well until just very recently.
Some extraordinary steps taken, bonuses, sign-up bonuses of as much as $40,000, $30,000, or $20,000, depending if you sign up for 48 or 36 or 30 months. More felony waivers so that if you've got a criminal record, they can still talk to you and maybe there's a place for you in the U.S. military.
Well, and I think it's those bonuses and those exceptions that have allowed them to meet the goals. But there are a lot of things playing in here. You've got more recruiters out, and with these bonuses, they've got more incentives to bring people in. People who are young and see the opportunity to make $40,000 on top of maybe some other bonuses, that can be up to a year or 2 years or even 3 years' salary for some people. That can be quite attractive, especially when you're talking about an enlistment for 3 or 4 years. But I think also most people understand going into this at this point that if you join the Army or any of the services, you are likely to go to Iraq or Afghanistan sometime in the near future. And recruiters are straightforward about that. And it's something that people really have to think twice about, especially when communities around the country have experienced the loss that has come with this war and have seen it in the news every day, and whose parents aren't necessarily excited about sending their children off to a war that may go on for some time.
And yet they're making those marks lately. Josh, who is signing up for the Army now, and who's not out of the youth of this country?
Sure. It's actually, I think, fairly similar to the people who've been joining all along. I mean, it's been an all-volunteer force for 30 years. They've been attracting many different kinds of people from across the spectrum. Obviously, you're talking about a generally younger group of people, people who are required to have a high school education or an equivalent degree. But you're also seeing people who are looking for a way to better their lives. You're seeing people who are going in, either they're stuck in dead-end jobs or they don't have many prospects or college isn't an option, and they're looking to get into something that will, in some cases, get them out of small towns, get them into something that's going to lead them to, as the film shows, adventure and situations that they wouldn't otherwise have seen. But certainly you have others, people who are questioning the wars or questioning the government's current policy, who aren't willing to get involved.
Or just too comfortable to go. And then I saw this amazing number in the Army Times newspaper. It said out of the potential pool of youth ages 17 to 24 available last year, the vast majority was considered unfit for service due to medical and physical problems, mostly obesity, or because of poor test scores, drug use, criminal records, or too many dependents. Out of 31.2 million people in that 17 to 24 pool, this is a Pentagon spokesman saying, only out of 31 million, only 4.7 million could be considered for U.S. military service, Josh.
That's absolutely true, Tom. I was just talking to the Army, actually, a few minutes ago, and they were telling me that about 3 in 10 of the people who fall into the age range that can join the Army, that's roughly 18 to 42, 3 in 10 of those people in America are qualified to join, and that means that they're medically sound, they're fit, they have not had a serious criminal record, they have not been a drug abuser. These are people who, you're talking the 3 in 10 that are qualified, and then you have to look at the number of people within that subset who are willing to join. And even within that subset, I mean, you've got a lot of people who wouldn't consider military service. So they're going after a fairly small pool, and as the economy has been good up until very recently, they were fighting with other industries to lure people into these jobs, and that's why I think the financial bonuses became even more important for them. Now that the economy has turned, it's unclear what effect that has had so far, because it's been such a fairly short period of time, but typically, when the economy is good, recruiting is harder.
We're going to get very up close and personal with recruiters and recruits in this hour. Josh White at the Washington Post. Josh, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
Let's listen to just a little bit from the beginning of the new HBO documentary, The Recruiter, showing recruiters in their bustling office with potential enlistees. Here's one pitch.
Elvis Presley, Axl Rose, Dave Thomas. You know who Dave Thomas is?
Yeah.
The guy who founded Wendy's, right?
Yeah.
Now, what do all four of those names have in common?
Famous.
Well, besides being famous. United States Army.
Okay. Elvis Presley, Axl Rose, Dave Thomas, founder of Wendy's. Joining me now from New York is Edith Belzberg, director and filmmaker. Her 2000 film Children Underground was nominated for an Academy Award. Her new film, The Recruiter, was an official selection at the Sundance Film Festival. It will be shown on HBO next Monday, July 28. It was shot in 2005 and 6 when violence was roiling Iraq and U.S. death tolls were high. It was a brutal time for recruiting. The documentary looks at how that played out in the town of Houma, Louisiana. Edit, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me here.
How would you characterize the kids, and they were high school students, that the recruiters targeted for their main efforts in this little town in Louisiana?
Well, I really think that the teenagers that I follow at that time, and when I first started visiting Sergeant Uze and visiting the Houma recruiting station in 2005, they really weren't feeling the effects of or the difficulties of recruiting. They were still one of the top recruiting stations in the country. Sergeant Uze was incredibly successful, as is shown in the film, and it was only a little bit later on after the town itself suffered a number of casualties that that you see the difficulty there. But I think I choose really a cross-section of teenagers who join. You have Bobby, who really doesn't need the college benefits. He his father is actually opposed to him at that time joining, and he really does want to join for a variety of different reasons. And then you have other recruits who are joining for benefits, for they feel that it is the best opportunity for them in their life at that period of time at 17 years old.
Mm. And already at that time, you've got some parents who are not keen about it at all. Here's one father, unnamed in the film, who goes into this busy military recruiting office for help. He asks the recruiters to help him persuade his son to go to college before joining the Army.
We'll mortgage the house if we got to get him into college, and we're willing to do that for him. Well, and I'm not trying to talk him out of the military, because I went, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me in my life.
Right.
The stuff they got going on in the sand over there is no place for an 18-year-old kid to be right now, you know.
A father will cry before this film is over, and the recruiters are not exactly going to stand up and help this father keep his son out of the Army. Adit, they are incredibly laser-focused on getting into the U.S. military new troops to help out those in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I think the father, it's interesting. The father, he himself was in the military, and he talks about how he just wants as many opportunities for his son. And I think it's interesting because he did feel comfortable to walk into the recruiting station. And I think there's a reason for that. Home in Louisiana, it's a very small community. And I think he felt an affinity with the recruiters, and he felt that he could talk to them and they would understand him.
And why not? But they're kind of rolling their eyes back at him and going for their quotas. Adit Belzberg, filmmaker, director of HBO's The Recruit, please stand by. When we come back, we'll talk with recruiter and recruit. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about military recruiting in a time of war and about the new HBO documentary, The Recruiter. Fresh recruits off to basic training there, but it's a big process to get them there. It certainly was in 2005 and 2006 as American casualties rose in the Iraq War, and Afghanistan no slouch right behind. We're talking this hour about what it takes to fill the ranks of the U.S. Army these days, getting up close with those who choose to serve, and those who sign them up, those who rope them in. The new HBO documentary, it'll air next Monday night, is The Recruiter. Its director, Adit Belzberg, joins us from New York City. We'll be joined in just a moment by the recruiter who's at the heart of the film, but I want to hear from some of the recruits, if we could first. Let's just get a sense. It follows Bobby, Matt, Chris, and Lauren, all in Houma, Louisiana. Here's Lauren, one of the chief subjects of the documentary, explaining that the Army was attractive because it gave her a future. She said her life in Houma wasn't easy.
I don't have no income coming to me. I don't have anybody to really help me. My mom can't help me. My dad won't help me. I don't have that support like some other people do.
She ends up out of the Army, AWOL, dealing with the fact that she's gay and where that fits in, and it did not work for her. Here's another of those, the focus of the film, Chris. A little overweight. He's not an easy guy to get past the requirements, physical requirements for the Army, but you can hear in these comments what's drawing him. He says he's joining the Army partly to gain confidence and lose weight. Here's how he explains it.
I'd been a pretty big guy for a while, you know, and I'm just tired of being big, and I was like, I'll work hard and put my mind to it. I can do this Army stuff, and they'll get me in the shape that I want to be in. I'm going in the right direction with my life. All the people out picking on me, they ain't doing nothing.
People picking on me ain't doing nothing. And here's Bobby, another subject in the film. He's going, and he's a very attractive candidate for the Army, but not exactly clear whether his parents, his father has real misgivings about it. Here he is, Bobby and his father, talking about their argument over whether he should join. You'll hear Bobby first, then his dad.
When you're 17, you have to get your parents' permission to join.
And they said, we're not giving you permission to join. We're going to make you wait till you're 18. So right when I turned 18, I went like 3 days after my birthday and signed up.
I'm a veteran. Both of us grandfathers are veterans. We have immediate family members who were in the military. So I couldn't sit there and say, as some families do, well, you're stupid if you do go in the military. Let somebody else do that. I could not give him that argument. I simply wanted to present to him the reality. We are at war.
And here, the recruiter at the heart of the film, the recruiter, Sergeant Yuze, that is Clay Yuze, delivering an inspirational speech in the high school gym with students looking on.
Sacrifice must be the eternal price of liberty. It's the highest honor to serve you in America's army. I believe in God. I believe in family. I believe in country. My name is Sergeant First Class Clay C. Yuze. I am now and will always be a guardian of freedom in the American way of life. I am and will always be an American soldier. America's Army, ready and relevant. Army leads the way.
Director of HBO's The Recruit, Adit Belzberg, joins us from New York, and now from Houma, Louisiana, Sergeant Clay Yuze, member of the Army's 75th Ranger Regiment at Fort Benning, Georgia. He was an Army recruiter in his hometown of Houma, Louisiana. He's featured at the heart of this documentary. He served 3 tours in Afghanistan. He is currently on leave from the Army. Sergeant Yuze, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. Hats off to your determination. You never quit in this documentary, though some might be at points shocked at the extent to which you're willing to go. You've said since the documentary was shot that recruiting for the U.S. Army is the hardest job in America today. Why, Sergeant?
Well, I mean, it's got its own challenges, Tom. There's a lot of things that are out of your control. There's a lot of political factors you have to mitigate through, and people's opinions and differences that they have in their own beliefs and value systems. But the bottom line is that, you know, I've been in the Army now for 13 years. At that point, when the film began, it was about 7.5, 8 years into my career. I was very passionate about what I was doing because I was that guy that had been there, done that, and worn the T-shirt, and was willing to get back out there and put it on again once my tour duty as a recruiter was done.
Sergeant Yuze, when you're in these homes and streets and in the halls of the high school where you seem, at least from the film, to spend a lot of time, whether you're in, you know, combat fatigues or in your full-dress uniform with all the medals on your chest, and there's an impressive lot of them, who are you looking for? I mean, you must have a very honed eye. You're one of the most successful recruiters in the country. What kind of kid or what kinds of kids are you looking to pull out of that high school population to help you meet your mark, meet your quotas?
You know, every recruiter's got their own status quo as far as what they're looking for. If it's an American citizen that's qualified for, I always followed policies and objectives. You know, it's not my job to say you're qualified or not. It's the regulations job. But personally, I look for an athletically gifted and an intelligent mind person to serve in the Army.
Adit, I couldn't help seeing in the young people that you focused on, they may have had those attributes, or they may not have, in Chris's case, certainly not an athlete, but at least 3 out of the 4 seemed to be, in some dimensions, troubled kids. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. We've all got our troubles. But even Matt, who we'll talk with later, who turned out to be a great soldier, he was doing this because his father had left his family in the lurch. He wanted to prove himself the man he thought his father was not. Chris, overweight, picked on. Lauren, with a family that had kind of fallen apart and real personal issues of her own. Did those look like deliberate targets to you, Adit?
I have to say, troubled kids, I mean, I remember when I was 17, it's one of the most vulnerable periods in your life. I think that we're all going through so much. I think some of the things that Chris was going through, I can identify with. Mm-hmm. I think it's a unique period in one's life. And I think one of the reasons also Sergeant Yuze was successful is because he could see past where the kids were at that time. Chris is actually on his second tour in Iraq today. So I think, you know, there's that one scene in the film where Sergeant Yuze is encouraging Chris, and it's as if he sees in him what potentially his parents and peers and other people in his life could not see, that he had the potential to do what he wanted to in life. At that point, it was the Army, and that was the option for him. I think all these kids had incredible potential. I don't see them as troubled. I see them as facing enormous obstacles, but probably no greater than many obstacles many teenagers face at one point or another. I think what's important, though, is the options that are available to them. As we see with one of the recruits, clearly the Army was not for her. She joined for the college benefits. She joined because she thought it was economically the best decision in her life, and that is not enough to pull someone through. I think what is tragic is
this is Lauren, whose home life was pretty much a mess, and whose mother was almost, in her case, almost encouraging her to get into the Army as a way to find her feet.
Her mother wanted her to have a better life than she had. And I think her mother loves her deeply and wanted something for her, and this is what she saw as the best option. I think what these kids deserve, as every high school student, every teenager deserves, is the best option possible for them, whether it's the military, where it's the Peace Corps, America Corps, or community college, but all options should be available to them. And I think what is tragic is when not all options are available.
And clearly, they're in this environment in Houma, there were a lot of options that were well beyond the reach of these kids. Sergeant Yuse, there was this amazing stretch of film where you are working with Chris to get him through the physical training requirement of running 1 mile in how many minutes, sir?
I'm sorry?
Chris had to run a mile in. I didn't catch what the time was to pass his physical requirements, and you were running alongside him in the film. What was the requirement he was trying to meet there?
He ran 2 miles, and he finished 2 miles in 15 minutes and 50 seconds.
I mean, my hat is so far off to you for the way you ran alongside him and talked him through that.
You know, that's the kind of things that we do in the brother in arms as we embrace each other, and the encouragement. And, you know, not to mislead when I say I look for an athletically gifted or an intelligent-minded person, that's kind of status quo. I mean, to serve in the military, there's a baseline level of those attributes that you need to bring to the table. But I could, like Adit said, I could see past that. And I think another reason that I was successful is because I wanted to serve as a role model citizen to these young men and women in those high schools, whether they join the military or not. You know, I enlisted 72 young Americans that were willing to serve, but I touched and I mentored and I counseled hundreds to college and to other avenues. And I think that was the reason that I was successful, is that, you know, I served as a role model. And I represented my uniform and my country with dignity and respect. And I was a man of integrity throughout my tenure as a recruiter and continue to be as I serve in the Army.
You were definitely incredibly focused, and you went to wherever it was required to go to get them in, even nose-to-nose with parents. Here's a bit in the film. The recruiter, at one point where Chris, the young man we've been talking about, is having trouble with his family. His stepfather is objecting to his enlistment. Sergeant Yuse gives Chris a pep talk.
Your stepfather, no disrespect to you, is my personal opinion, is an armchair quarterback. I will not be questioned by a guy that sits on his couch all day. I'm not going to argue with the stupid.
I don't care if it's your dad. I'm going to call an ace of spades, ace of spades. I'm going to tell you you're right or you're wrong. Because guess what? I'm like your dad now. And I will not tolerate it. You know what I'm saying? You're going to do great things, man. Not for the Army, for you.
Sergeant Yuse, what was it like to go up against parents? And this stepfather was not the only one that you had to do that with. Bobby's father had deep, deep misgivings. What was that like for you to have to recruit past the parents of these young people?
You know, Tom, it was challenging. It was very challenging. But just like I said, you know, an ace of spades is an ace of spades. I mean, a fact is a fact. The United States and the policies that I followed in recruiting, it said that an 18-year-old young man or woman is qualified to make their own decisions. And anything that I presented to them, if it was their track, you know, Chris was kind of a different story. I don't think the film really portrayed the whole story behind that as best as it could. And I understand there's edits and there's things that have to go on with making a film. But, you know, Chris was dead set on making that decision, and he's doing well. And he's living proof that a young man with determination, discipline, and desire can be successful in whatever he sets his mind to. And that was Chris's end goal.
But
he's
tough,
accomplished that goal, and he continues to serve.
Tough recruiting, though, as we saw in the time of such a controversial war. Here's Bobby, one of the film's subjects, and his father with different views on military service in time of war. Here's the father, then the son.
I'm sure Iraq is full of a bunch of nice people, but should my son die for them? That's the conflict I have.
Our government couldn't have sent us there unless they had a good reason to do it. Liberating the people in Iraq, you know, and getting the insurgency out of Iraq, that's a good enough reason to me right there.
There we are from the film The Recruiter, HBO's. It runs Monday night. The director, Edith Belzberg, is with us. Sergeant Clay Uzay is with us. He's the recruiter at the heart of the film. One of those that he recruits in the course of this hour and a half is Matthew Marks, now Corporal Matthew Marks, U.S. Army, recruited in that 2005-06 time frame, served 15 months since in Iraq and returned in December 07. He has now replaced Sergeant Uzay as recruiter in Houma, Louisiana. He joins us from Houma. Corporal Marks, thanks very much for being with us.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm very well. You clearly took on Clay Uzay as a kind of role model. He inspired you right into the Army. You're a little bit older and wiser now. What do you think of the whole experience?
I love the Army. It's been the best thing I've ever decided to do. And I'm proud that I took on the journey and the challenge to become the soldier that I am today.
And what is it like for you? You're quoted in the material from HBO saying, as a recruiter, I didn't think it would be so hard to get someone to join the Army. I'm not going to lie to them. I'm not going to sit and tell them that the bloody and gory stories about what happened, you know, should make them scared to join. You're not going to lie to them about suicide bombers and all the rest. How hard is it right now, Corporal Marks?
You know, that was whenever I talked to Adidas at that time, that was before I actually got out here. I was out of recruiting school. Now that I'm actually out here, I've been here for about a month and a half. Basically, what I do is I just get the Army story out there. I let them know what the Army's about, you know, what we do, why we do it, and the benefits that we have. It's an all-volunteer Army, so once they understand what we do, because there's a big misconception on what we do and, you know, what the people think we do. So once I let them know what we're about, you know, it's their turn to, you know, bite the hook and take the challenge if they want to. I'm not forcing anyone to do anything.
And who do you look for, Matthew, now that you're the one in the halls of the high school and around town? What's the profile?
Basically, for me, like Sergeant Uzay said, I played football at the same school he did. We graduated from the same alma mater. I look for, you know, mostly young men and women that, you know, I can relate to and talk to them about the things that I've done whenever I was young in their age. And also, you know, I just try and prospect and put my information out there so anyone, you know, that comes to me would be, you know, what I'm looking for. I just let them know what we're all about.
What you're all about there, let's listen to Sergeant Uzay once more in the film The Recruiter. Recruiters get together to discuss the tough times they're having recruiting in the middle of a war. Uzay here pipes up to clarify their mission.
I don't have time to make a friend. That'll come along after they join the Army. Every time you get on the phone, there's two sales being made. Someone's selling you on why they don't want to do it, or you're selling on them on why they should do it. That's what you need to know. Because if we fall short, then we're selling our brothers in arms short in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Edith, we saw Matt in this film turning out pretty well equipped. I mean, basic training was tough for everybody. We saw one young woman in particular having an unbelievable panic attack as they got kind of, signed in there for basic training. Matt was in good shape. He did very well with it. He's been off to Iraq and he's back. Does it surprise you that the Army has chosen him to go back to Houma, Edith, to be a recruiter himself?
No, not at all. Matt, as far as I understand it, requested recruiting duty. He had his 15-month tour. He had the option of he had many options available to him, and he did choose, I believe, rather than going back for the second tour, to go back to recruiting, to take recruiting duty, and to go home to Houma.
Matt, why did you make that choice?
Tom, I made that decision. I talked to Sergeant Uzay about how I can get closer to home. I had wanted to start a family when I got back from Iraq, and I talked to my wife, you know, about how we can do that. And she said she'd rather be closer to home before we actually started the family. So I talked to Sergeant Uzay. He's my mentor still throughout my military career, and he told me, you know, it's pretty much a guarantee that I probably would get home if I put in a recruiting packet. So that's what I did, and now I'm a recruiter, and now we're finding out that we're having our first baby in February. So I'm pretty excited, and it worked out for the best.
Congratulations, sir. When you sign up kids now in Houma, do they know when they put pen to paper that they're very likely going to war, that they're putting their life on the line?
Definitely. Tell everyone that there's a good likelihood that they'll be in Iraq or Afghanistan upon completion of their training.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what it takes to fill the ranks of the U.S. Army these days, getting up close with those who choose to serve and those who sign them up through the film of the new HBO documentary, The Recruiter. It plays Monday night. It's director Edith Belzberg is with us, along with Sergeant Clay Uze, who is the recruiter at the heart of the film, and one of his recruits now, a recruiter himself in Houma, Louisiana, Corporal Matthew Marks of the U.S. Army. Bobby, in the documentary, does finally join the Army. His dad gets emotional when he begins reflecting on war and his son going off to boot camp.
Old men start wars that young men fight. That's what I think when I'm going to be driving him to the airport.
Lauren joins the Army, eventually decides it's not for her. She fights with her mother over whether she should go back. She also struggles with being gay in the military. She eventually goes AWOL.
I had a relationship that almost went because of the Army. I have a good relationship with somebody I love and I care about. She makes me happy. When I go back there, I'm going to be depressed again. I don't like it. I hate it. I'd rather have a regular job.
Sergeant Uze, the Army still has, as I understand, a don't ask, don't tell policy, but what about when it comes to recruiting and homosexuality? Did you know that Lauren was gay? Did she know what Army policy was on that before going in? Did you see that as something that might attract her to the Army, or should you have told her not to go there, given the Army policy?
No, sir. I had no recollection of any conversation that we ever had that alluded to her sexual orientation, nor did Army policy allow me to ask her sexual orientation. And mm-hmm. It kind of was a newsflash to me when I seen it in the film. But that was her personal prerogative. But yes, she was briefed on several occasions of the Army's policy by myself and along with the Military Interest Processing Station, and also when she in-processed basic training.
She ended up going AWOL. It's a mark against her in life. Will be probably some kind of burden for her as a recruiter. How do you look on that kind of story? You've got success stories, too, and Matt is right here as one of them. But what do you make of Lauren's story?
You know, it was a personal decision for her to make. You know, just like HBO summed it up in the documentary, my passion, my discipline, their decision. And I think that probably hits it right on the head. You know, it was her decision to make. She understood the policies, and she violated the policies. The Army has regulations and strict guidelines for just reasons, because we have the ultimate responsibility of providing the strength and the freedom that we appreciate and endure today. It was a personal decision of hers, and I haven't spoken to her since her separation from the service. As a role model, as a mentor, a little disappointed that things didn't work out for her, but I'm sure that she'll bounce back and she'll make good decisions, and hopefully she'll learn from a mistake, and she'll continue on to be successful in life. I wish her well.
Let's go to our listeners. A lot want to join this conversation. Shayna in Clarksville, Tennessee. Shayna, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say, a lot of parents and loved ones do try to deter their loved ones from joining the military, and I think it's due to lack of full information. I joined in 1999, and I served till November 2005 with 3 deployments myself. My husband's a special forces operator here in Fort Campbell, North Carolina. And I think that when you have the information that you need and you're thinking about joining the military, that being informed of all the options that are available to you, Guard, Reserve, the different branches, and knowing which job or which area that you think that you'll succeed in, the military is one of the best decisions for a lot of people. But due to that lack of knowledge, a lot of parents and loved ones to deter people from making that decision. And it could be, a life-changing for the better for a lot of people who, may change their minds not to go. But I think that it was a great move for myself.
Shayna, may I ask, are you still in the military, Shayna, after 3 deployments?
No, I'm not. I actually ETS honorably, and I now do contracting for the military. So I'm very close to it as far as contracting is concerned. I go to different military bases with the company that I work with and help them out with equipment, but I decided that I wanted to do one term, which was the 6 years, and I was ready for whatever the military gave to me, because while you're in the military, you gain mentors like the recruiter. You have good people who are, you know, there for you, and you learn a lot in that process, and you're equipped, and you learn how to deal with, you know, traumatic situations, or, you know, how to deal with your emotions in situations, and having that support in the military kind of helps you.
Shana, we've got your perspective. We've got that perspective on it, and we appreciate it very much. Thanks for calling. Let me get another call here from New London, Connecticut. And John. John, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just got out of the Navy. I was in there. I joined in early 2001. Just got out, honorable discharges on two submarines. One of the big things that I saw with, well, myself, I had no problems. My recruiter was great. I had more questions, got into a great program. But later on, when I was assigned to mentor young sailors coming into command and everything, and even just other ones, they would gripe that, the recruiter lied to me, and then I'd ask them, well, did you ask them about this or that, or, like, no, and it seems to be a common theme that when they're going into the recruiting office, they'll just blindly go and sign or just say, they'll see dollar signs or, ooh, we'll pay for college, without asking about the details. And the recruiters, if you ask them, they'll tell you the details. But they're not doing this. And
so what question, John, would you say, just out of the Navy, what question would you say those considering signing up ought to be asking? What kind of questions?
They need to be asking the details, like what program, what benefit do I get out of this program? Where do I go? What bonus do I get with this program? What term of enlistment do I need to do with this certain program? Because different programs need different terms of enlistment. And by the way, I had been in for 5 years, and I got a call from an Army recruiter asking if I want to join the Army. I was already an E-5, so you guys are doing a great job.
Really beating the bushes. You're just out of the Navy and getting pulled back right away. John, thanks for your call. Adit, I wonder if you can share with us the moment when you know, most thought to yourself, wow, these guys will go to any length to fill the ranks. They'll do whatever it takes. I had several of those moments in your film, but I wondered when you maybe most had that sense, Adit.
I think one thing that I came to is that how difficult it is, and that there were certain recruiters that would prefer redeploying or going back into the regular Army rather than because of the difficulties of recruiting.
Back into foxhole rather than the recruiting office because it's that hard?
Absolutely. There are recruiters, and I think that you would hear that often, that some recruiters, it was a very difficult task for them, and the pressures of recruiting were very, very difficult, that actually going back into the regular Army was something that they would prefer to do rather than that.
There's a moment in your film, The Recruiter, when Sergeant Yuze just has had enough, and he's talking about how hard it is, and also thinking about the fairness of who gets recruited and how. He says something is wrong with the U.S. system of service in this clip.
I definitely have the hardest job in America today. I'm good at this, but I am sick and tired of recruiting. I don't feel that we should have to work as hard as we do to find people to join the Army. I think we should have some type of federally mandated system. That's my personal take. I don't want a draft. I'm a fan of federal service. Give something back. It's not fair.
Sergeant Yuze, what exactly do you mean there? It's not fair, and we should have some type of federally mandated system. I know that was a bad day, but still, what were you thinking?
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking is what I still think personally today. I think that, you know, it's give and take, but if you take, you should give back.
And what do you mean by take and give?
When I say take, partake in the freedoms of this country, the liberties that we have, the freedom to walk free on the streets, the freedom to have uncorrupt police departments to protect you, to have firefighters out there, all the great things that America gives to us on the shore. And it's even when I said, you know, the toughest job in America, you know, I truly believed at that time in my life that it was the toughest job on American soil that I had. You know, right now was very challenging. You know, we faced constant challenges, much like what you portrayed out in the show that was in the film. And I just truly believe that, you know, I'm the kind of person that I'm going to put in a hard day's work for a hard day's pay, regardless of what I do. in or out of the military.
And what do you think about this fairness issue? Houma, Louisiana is no country club. You got real working people there, a lot of people
right.
who do not have a cushy life of any kind.
Right.
But you know who's joining the military now. It's not out of affluent communities in general.
I really think that that's kind of misleading because Fox News recognized Houma, Louisiana is one of the fastest growing small metropolitan cities in America just last week. They have the highest home appreciation value. I think that, you know, the film shows a good portion of that, but we're not a small, impoverished community. We're a very flourishing, small town. We have a lot of industry here. There's a lot of, you know, attorneys, doctors, same thing. So I really don't think that, that economical status has anything to do with it. You know, I think regardless of your economical status that you should be as an American, my personal opinion is that you should have some type of servitude, an attitude to give back what's been given to you for over 200 years.
Army Times a couple of weeks ago, rural areas remain fertile for recruiting, talking about how it's rural America that puts up a disproportionate percentage of those who join. Why do you think that is, Sergeant?
I'm not the subject matter expert on why, you know, rural areas compared to metropolitan areas would join. You know, I guess my personal perspective on that would be I'm kind of a country boy. You know, I was raised hunting and fishing. My dad taught me how to live off the land. I was athletically inclined, and I was probably more or less fit for what I'm doing now. You know, I was an active athlete, so leading men and women as well was not a hard task for me. It's something that I enjoy doing. It's something I enjoy giving back. You know, I just want to do my part while I'm here as an American citizen to make sure that my kids and my grandkids will still have the opportunity to live in a free America.
Let's take a call from Winchester, Virginia, and Michael. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi. I just retired from the Air Force after 25 years. A couple things that strike me is that, first of all, we went to our second generation of the all-volunteer service. What that means to society as a whole is that there are fewer and fewer young people who are close to somebody who has served. So the concept of service to the United States in the military is fading from our collective memory.
Mm-hmm.
That may be one of the first problems that a recruiter faces. The second thing, of course, is the current situation that we're in down with Iraq and Afghanistan. If we have a society that is not used to serving our country and they see things like that happening, and the very real possibility that people that they know who have come back maimed or worse, they can see that could be a real large deterrent to a lot of people serving right now. When we talk about the draft in the United States, the draft may be something in the long term could be a lot more feasible economically for this country to maintain when we talk about a service. Of course, it's not politically popular right now, but those are the things I think that after seeing what I saw while I was in the military are things that we have to come to grips with. If we still want to have a viable military in the long term,
yep.
We're going to have to make some decisions on how we're going to maintain it.
Michael, thank you very much for that call. Corporal Marks, Matt Marks, what about it? Everybody has seen the stories of people getting wounded, a lot of wounded in Iraq. Does that make it tougher for you? Do kids bring that up? Do they say, you know, Corporal, what are the chances I'm going to be shot?
First, I want to give my thoughts and prayers to the families, you know, that have family members that were wounded or, you know, killed in Iraq or Afghanistan. But that does come up frequently, you know, casualties of war. And what I tell them is that there's, you know, there's different jobs in the Army that you can pick from. We are the best trained army in the world, and there's different types of jobs where, you know, you either pick to be in combat or not. I mean, I'm not saying that there's a likelihood that you won't be in combat, but, I mean, there's different jobs you can pick that's more deterrent of you not being directly involved with that type of thing.
But they must face quite high odds of being in a war theater in this time.
Hey, you know, it depends on the job they choose. It's a volunteer, and they know what their options are before they leave, and it depends on the job they pick on what kind of you know, surroundings they'll have when they're deployed.
Let me get one more call here from Steve in Newport News, Virginia. Steve, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. I just did 25 years in the Air Force myself. My father did 30 years plus in the Marine Corps. I want to say thank you to the recruiters. I mean, that's what brought my father into the service. I brought him into the Corps and took our family from, at that time, sharecroppers, gave us all an education, I still believe that this, for some folks, this is one of the best social programs we got going. It's not just the education we get, it's the discipline we get to do something with that education. And I just want to tell the corporal and the sergeant there, thank you for what you do, guys.
Steve, thank you very much. And a thank you back to you from them. Adit, you hear people putting their hands up and saying, this worked for me. We see and hear the determination of Sergeant Yuse and Corporal Marks here. Yet I couldn't help being struck at the same time. You talked about options earlier, and despite what Sergeant Yuse says, these did not all look like kids with terrific options in their hometown. He raises the fairness issue in your film. The American way of military recruiting and filling the ranks seem fair to you coming out of this project.
You know, it's interesting. When I the first time I went to HOMA, I have to, and all the subsequent trips, I constantly felt I was at a country at war. Everyone was affected by the war in some way. They either knew one, someone who was serving, someone who had been killed or injured. And it was very different than when I would return to New York. That's one thing. I mean, everyone was affected by it in some way, and going back, I mean, and not focusing on, you know, the rural communities are disproportionately represented in the Army. You have 40% of the Army is made up from people from the South, and what's interesting is that they are people from rural communities are more likely to, from statistics that I've seen, 60% more likely to be injured or killed in combat. So I think, you know, when we are seeing this sort of disproportion, there is a certain inequality. There is an inequality that we're seeing in America, and I think it's important to look at it. I think it's important to look at why they're joining. If they are joining for educational benefits, there is that needs to be addressed in another way.
It's loud and clear in the documentary, and we're out of time with that. But Adit Belzberg, thanks very much for being with us and for doing this work. Thanks for joining us today. Sergeant Clay Yuse and Corporal Matthew Marks, thanks to both of you. If you've served, you'll find it interesting. If you haven't, you're almost obligated to watch this and see what people do. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.